Your voice. Your questions. Your morning radio with Clement Maniatella.
This is 7:02.
All right, it's 16 minutes now after 10 o'clock. I want us to start a conversation about the responsibilities of the Independent Police Investigative Directorate. I said to you earlier that the police sometimes break the law. This is the law that they're supposed to enforce. And you need a watchdog. Hence, we've got IPED. But the question I'm asking you this morning is whether you think they've been able to play an effective oversight role over the police, or have they failed in holding them accountable? Because their mandate is very clear. They've got to conduct independent, impartial, and quality investigations of identified criminal offences allegedly committed by members of the SAPS and Metro Police, and to make appropriate recommendations in line with the IPED Act. And I have issue already with the recommendations part of what's expected of them, and I'll tell you why a little later on. But do they even have the capacity to do that? Do they have the capacity to do these investigations? Because IPED is under-resourced and incapable of managing the caseloads of alleged police criminality it registers every year. And yes, their investigations must be independent, they must be unbiased, but when the police minister can still be involved in appointing an IPED head, how unbiased do you think they're going to be? Or at the very least, the perception of bias. So I wanted to chat to the IPED as well about the killings of suspects recently by police. They've indicated that the killing of suspected criminals is actually on the increase by police. There were 14 people already believed to be suspects who were recently shot dead by police in two separate incidents in Mpumalanga, in KwaZulu-Natal as well. So is the system for holding police officers accountable strong as it should be? And what needs to be done to enhance the system of accountability? I remember the Sunday Times running a story about police officers who have been found guilty of rape by the police watchdog IPED, but they were let off the hook in some cases with written warnings and suspected salaries. Can you imagine? Police officers are found guilty of rape, but all that happens is you get given a written warning or they suspend your salary. That's ridiculous. That raises questions around accountability in the police. According to the Independent Police Investigative Directorate's annual report, two officers found guilty of rape by the directorate were given written warnings, while a third had his salary suspended. I mean, you don't need anyone to tell you how shockingly lenient these sanctions are. A criminal conviction of rape, for instance, carries a minimum 10-year prison term. And that's probably going to change now with the new laws that are coming in. And what this case has demonstrated is that because IPED is also limited, because they can only recommend, that's limitations on their part. Because often they find, yes, they found these police officers guilty, and then they send the verdict to the judgment to the stations where they work. And then those stations have the authority and the choice to decide what sanctions they're going to impose. But then why doesn't IPED, for instance, refer the matters for criminal prosecution? Do they do that? I wonder. And that's one of the questions I'll be asking Thuso Kiefalakai, who is the director for investigations at IPED. But I want to start with Dumelo first, who's calling us from Johannesburg. Dumelo, good morning.
Morning, Clement, how are you?
I'm all right, man. Yeah, go ahead. Have you had any experiences with IPED?
Bad experience, Clement. Bad. I'm a victim of 17 years being shot at home by the police captain, Mr. Wakeni Makhubo. And the IPED, the SAPS, and the NPA, they are covering up, and then they even compelled me for an attempted robbery that was false, intended to protect the same cop. I won that case, but still they can't prosecute the cop. They denied the attempted murder against the cop up to date. Now I'm taking them to the Constitutional Court because I feel that my rights is being violated dismally. Mm. Because I have transcript, the court finds me not guilty of trying to rob the cop the firearm. But the cop shot me intentionally at home in my uncle's funeral. Night vision. Just imagine that. Mm. And then the iPad can come and tell me that there's no case. They can't investigate this case. The case has been exhausted by the NPA. Mm. Okay, my question is, how can you say you can't investigate the case where there are statements of the same cops saying with their own mouth that we shot this guy because he was trying to rob us?
But the cops to be clear, Tumelo, so you were shot by a cop who had claimed that you were trying to rob them. And after IPED investigated, what happened? What was their judgment?
I have a letter from the IPED. It's a useless letter that is...
What did they say, though? What did they find? Did they find that police officer guilty?
No. Not at all. What did they find is that the matter is being exhausted with the NPA.
Okay.
So now I must take my legal route for civil claims and what. What about criminal case?
Yes, exactly.
What about criminal case? Because the guy shot me with a state firearm. I have a reference number. I have a docket. I have a transcript of the court proving me innocent. So if they are independent, like they are claiming, what is the problem of them arresting the cop, take the cop to the court of law rule against me?
Got it. Tumelo, in Joburg, thank you very much for calling us. I really appreciate it. I'll put that to my guest in a moment. It's 23 now after 10 o'clock.
Your voice. Your questions. Your morning radio with Clement Maniatella. This is 702.
So Tuso Kiafelakai is the Director for Investigations at the Independent Police Investigative Directorate. Thank you so much for making time for us, Tuso. Good morning.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm okay. I want us to start off with what has been in the news recently. We'll get into other matters in a moment. My understanding is that there have been concerns raised about the killing of suspected criminals that is on the increase because there were 14 people believed to be suspected criminals that were recently shot dead by police in two separate incidents in both Mpumalanga and KwaZulu-Natal. How steep is that increase of killings of suspected criminals by police?
The killings of criminals has gone to a rise indeed. It's quite prevalent, particularly in certain provinces. You have just mentioned Mpumalanga, but the most provinces that are contributing in the main is your Gauteng, your Eastern Cape, your KZN, as well as the Western Cape. So the Mpumalanga, it was just an incident that has just occurred.
Mm.
But the point that I want to make is that if you look at the prevalence of these crimes, they go hand in hand with the crime rate that is on the rise in the country.
Mm-hmm.
You find that where there is a shootout between the police and the criminals, there would always be an element of police having to respond on cases that are of serious nature. So they regard such as the trio crimes, which are the robbery, residential, that's number one. Number two, we talk of business robbery, and we also talk of hijacking. So those cases, as and when the police receive the information about such, they then respond promptly. And as a result, you'll find that the criminals, when they go to rob, they are armed to the teeth. So then there is a shootout between the police and the criminals. And IPED is then informed by the police that we have just been involved in a shootout with the criminals. And that's when now IPED will come in to investigate as to the circumstances that led to the shooting and ultimately the death of the criminals.
And during those investigations, in your experience, often do you find that the police were merely just protecting themselves, because the criminals often are the ones who start shooting first, or are there cases where police are also just involved in what other people may call, you know, extrajudicial killings, where, you know, they take the law into their own hands, so to speak, and they are the ones that start shooting because they think, well, we're going to be protected anyway because we'll claim that we're protecting ourselves from the criminals. What do you find in your investigations in those circumstances?
Yeah, you know, our trend, you know, the crime trends and patterns has revealed that in instances where in the police are on the right wrong side of the law, the success rate of IPD is very high. In a sense that you'll find that the arrest is immediate in the main, because we would then be able to effect an arrest and process the matter that it's then referred to court. But in instances where now someone has informed the police about a certain crime, a serious crime that is in progress, and where sometimes it's a multiple criminals, that's where now you'll find that there are many firearms that are involved there. And there are cartridges, you know, that were used and all of that. So for us then to process that crime scene, it normally takes longer for us then to get to a point where we are able to say, this is would then be the outcome. But it's not us who make that call. What we do as IPT, we collect the information in our investigation. We get the technical reports, meaning the reports like your postmortems. It's not us who generates postmortems, the residual powders, the ballistic reports. Those are independent reports from independent experts.
Yeah.
And then we also obtain witness statements.
Okay.
Yeah.
Once you've got all of that, right, you've got whether it's a pathology report, if that's what you required, whether it's the witness statement, and as IPD you decide that, okay, this police officer must be guilty of this and that, is it the court that makes that decision, or do you make a finding like that as IPED? Can you make a finding like that?
No, we don't make a finding.
Take it to court.
We look as to whether the information that we have collected is ready for referral to NPA.
To the NPA.
So the NPA, the DPP then, will then have to run through the case, peruse it, and make a decision. It's not IPT altogether.
Do you make any recommendation after your investigations, maybe to the employer of the police officers?
Yes, there are three types of recommendations in actual fact. The first category of recommendations are those that we refer to as positive recommendations. And the second category is negative recommendation. And the third one is policy recommendations. On positive, it's where we are saying we have done everything that we needed to do as IPED, and we have referred the matter, we are referring the matter to you as subs. But according to our investigation, we didn't find anything wrong on the part of your police members. Negative recommendations, that's where we are saying we have investigated and we are confident that your member has contravened your prescripts, particularly in this specific section. But there are policy recommendations where sometimes you will find that there is a policy gap, where we would be saying to the police, we have found a gap here in terms of the policy during our investigation. Because when we investigate, from time to time, we would request their policies and prescripts to check if ever their action was in line.
Mm-hmm.
And where we find that there is a policy gap, then we make such policy to say, can you review your policy?
After the latest in Eyewitness News headlines, I want us to talk about what happens when the employers themselves are bringing about lenient sanctions on the part of police officers who have transgressed the law, because then you don't have the authority to say fire this person, or this person has got to be suspended. That's a decision of the employer. But what happens if that sanction is lenient? I'll give you an opportunity to respond to that after the.
You're with Clement Maniatella.
7:02.
It's 24 minutes before 11 o'clock. We're in conversation this hour with the head of investigations at IPED, Thuso Kiefelakai. And just before the headlines, before I go to calls and WhatsApp, sir, too, so before the headlines, I indicated you were explaining to us the three different kind of recommendations after your investigations. What happens when there is a lenient sanction from the employer of the police officers you found have transgressed the law? I'm reminded of a case that the Sunday Times reported about, of these police officers who were found guilty of rape, and I don't know if they were found guilty by the courts, or if, as IPED, you had decided that the evidence suggested was strong enough against these police officers. But the Sunday Times reported that they were let off the hook because they were given written warnings and others got suspended salaries. Do you remember that case? If you do, what transpired there, and what do you do when, as IPED, you give recommendations that Clement has transgressed the law as a police officer, something has got to be done, but instead of me being dismissed or fired, I get a 3 months suspended salary?
Thanks very much to that question. Let me point out that there are two ways in which recommendations are dealt with. I want to point out that the Civilian Secretariat for Police Service has got a legislative mandate to monitor the extent to which this SAPS, as well as the Metro Police, are able to implement the recommendations that are generated by IPED.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whilst they are doing that part, which is done in many ways through the consultative forum, which is a forum that is regulated in terms of the Act. We also have internal controls that as and when we make these recommendations, there is an expectation that the police should conclude that within a certain time frame.
Mm-hmm.
And as they do that, they would, of course, come up with sanctions. And indeed, there are times when the sanctions are lenient. Some are laughable, they are short of dismissal, and it's a concern. But at least we have got internal controls, where then when we receive such, we would then look into those recommendations and say, we do not agree with these recommendations. And then what we would then do, we take the matter on review. So that is the process.
Okay, so you can review the decision that's been taken by the employer.
Indeed.
So do you remember this case, though, of these officers who were found guilty of rape? Because according to IPED's annual report for the 2020-2021, this was contained in that report of the three officers in Mpumalanga who were given verbal warnings after an IPED investigation, and these guys were found guilty of raping a person in custody. Do you remember that case, and can you confirm whether the people got warnings and suspended salaries?
I would suggest that on this matter, I should revert back to you, even if it means in writing. But I want to point out that the moment you mention rape in custody, the chances are that is not rape by a police officer. And when there are cases of rape in custody, the suspects or the act itself, you'll find that it's inmate to inmate. Meaning the police would have to deal with the rape case themselves. Mm-hmm. Then we will deal with the matter that relates to the fact that it happened in their custody, which could be in the police cells.
But the custody could also be in the police van. So if the police come to arrest me from here and I'm in the van, I'm already in police custody.
Very true. Very true. Custody is broad.
Mm.
Yeah. But I was just citing an example, and you are correct to say that.
Okay. So, all right. I'll get you to maybe give us a response about these two cases, because I'm really interested in whether or not these police officers who were found guilty of raping someone were just given written warnings and whether they're still in the system, because that's really, really crazy to think of, because there can't be a justification for these shockingly lenient sanctions. What are the limitations for you? So when you appeal some of these sanctions you say are laughable, are you being heard?
To a large extent, we are being heard, because I want to point out that of course, in previous years, you get a sense that there were some challenges.
Mm.
But the executive director, Med Geledin Tlatsing, has done a lot to change the manner in which IPED has been doing business with the SAPS and the MPS, including the DPP, in a sense that a whole lot of gaps have been closed, in a sense that there is some communication and feedback is expected. And when we raise such issues where there are concerns, the police tend to hear us. They tend to cooperate. They tend to re-look into the matters.
Mm-hmm.
And I will give an example of a matter where in a general was given a sanction which was inappropriate. And a review was made to
what
that
was
effect.
The criminal offense?
The criminal offense was a corruption.
Okay.
But after the review, that senior member was dismissed till today.
So, but what was the initial sanction? Did they just give him a written warning or what?
It was a salary suspension for a couple of months, about 2 or 3 months.
Was he found guilty in court for corruption after your investigation, or your investigation recommended that the evidence is strong against him, therefore do something?
Indeed. But the criminal matter is still unfolding.
Okay.
Yes.
Do you refer all the criminal matters to the NPA for prosecution?
We refer all the criminal matters that we were able to complete.
Okay.
Once a matter is completed, we take it to the DPP, not even to the junior prosecutor.
Mm.
We take it to the high level where the matter is decided.
So how do you deal, and speaking of completing matters, because you also are very under-resourced as IPED, you are struggling with managing the caseloads of these alleged police criminality that are registered every single year. So how are you coping with the caseload, and what impact does it have on justice for people that have been prejudiced and have been done wrong by the SAPS?
You are very correct that we are very under-resourced, and the intake of cases is spiking. There is a high spike in that regard. But what we are doing with the little resource that we are having, taking into cognizance the budget that we are allocated. The budget is very small, but we just decided to say we will do more with less. We have come up with the strategies. We have developed various strategies wherein we are working hard to say we have to look into older cases which are serious, very serious.
Mm-hmm.
The death cases, the rape cases, the torture cases, the corruption cases, we prioritize such. And we know that once we have hit the priority cases, then we are able then now to look into the cases that are of less serious nature. For instance, the assault common.
Mm.
We will then say, let's prioritize the death cases. And then the assault common, once maybe a province A has done dealt with the death cases, the rape cases, and so on, then you can go to, back to your assault common cases and deal with such. Mm. So that's the strategy that we have adopted to try and deal with these cases, because we do understand that even the person who has been assaulted requires justice. And then we also have the project-based investigation where we will saturate a place just to make sure that we deal with as many matters as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How, I want to go to the questions in a moment. 011-883-0702, that's where you can give us a call. Share your experiences if you've dealt with IPID. Maybe you want to understand more about the roles and responsibilities of this police watchdog. The WhatsApp line is 072-702-1702. Now, when you look at what the IPID is mandated to do, they've got to conduct independent, impartial investigations. And sometimes I ask myself how they do that when the police minister is somehow still involved in the appointment of an IPID head, for instance. Does that impact on your impartiality at all? Because I know there's a bill that was introduced in Parliament to try and change that. But members of the opposition are still concerned in that the police minister can recommend or will have to recommend a candidate for the position. What does that do to the perception people have about your potential bias as IPID?
Yeah, I would say that from the investigation point of view, the minister does not interfere. The minister does not tell us how to deal with our matters. We only account to him in terms of how we have dealt with the matters, and is also regulated in terms of the IPID Act, that we provide Section 9 and report, which is the biannual report. And then we will also generate the annual report. And we also account to the Parliament, to the PCP. And then when we as we account to Parliament, Parliament is comprised of different political parties, and whatever they need from us, whatever they require of us, we are bound to give them the information that is accurate, that is not misleading, and that what we have been doing consistently as the department. So the issue of the minister having appointed the executive director, it's not impacting on the day-to-day activities.
Well, there was a fight with Robert McBride, which ended up in the Constitutional Court, which is why, thank goodness, now we've got this new bill. I suppose the point I'm making is you don't want a head of IPID who is now feeling scared to do their job because, ooh, what if I upset the Minister of Police, who's actually appointed me? So you've got to find a way to manage that perception of bias. Let me take some calls and then we're going to continue. Tato is calling us from Renbeck. Tato, good morning.
Good morning. My first comment on this is that when it comes to saying an IPID head is appointed by the Minister of Police and therefore they won't do their investigations properly, that is incorrect. Because are we saying Minister of Police wants to protect every single police officer that exists, you know? This would apply, same with presidents appointing judges and everybody else, you know? All positions, someone is appointed by someone. These positions that are fiduciary or where you have a certain responsibility to the public or to the constitution, it doesn't matter who appoints you. You're expected to carry yourself in a certain way and do certain things without fear or favor. It's the same for the NPA. The prosecutors must still do their job without fear or favor. It doesn't matter who actually appointed them. So I think only when an IPID head doesn't do their job or is corrupt, do we then say, hey, you're corrupt, and it could be related to a minister or unrelated. So I don't think being appointed by a minister necessarily means that an IPID head is compromised. That would mean even the judges and everybody is compromised, you know? And then my second thing is, when it comes to police that are charged, you know, I'm an attorney, and I would say we need to remember that they still enjoy the same constitutional protections as everybody else. So proof must be there beyond a reasonable doubt that this police officer has committed a crime. Or if it's still within work, yes, they can use a balance of probabilities. Mm-hmm. But let us not say they are not doing their job. When the guy you're interviewing referred that matters are often then taken to the DPP for decision, the DPP has to look at the prima facie case and say, do we have a prima facie case? Is there a reasonable prospect of prosecution? Is there evidence? And then proceed. So usually, yes, you can call in now. I saw this police officer doing this and that. They investigate. But honestly, if there isn't any evidence, are you saying simply because it's a police officer that's accused, we should just have kind of what people have with celebrities, a cancel culture, just because you're accused, but there isn't actually evidence? So I think let us remember, even if the person that's being alleged to have committed a crime, just because we're a police officer doesn't mean, oh, you must be persecuted whether we have evidence or not. They still enjoy the same protections you and I would have in case someone was falsely accusing them, you know. So let us also understand that it's not that they fail to do their job, but we have to look at evidence. Courts are evidence-led. Prosecutors are evidence-led. That is my comment on this matter. Thank you.
Tato in Randburg, thank you so much. I'll respond to some of that in a moment. Let's hear from Emmanuel in Johannesburg. Emmanuel, good morning.
Good morning, Clement. How are you?
Shop, shop, man. Go ahead.
Good, thanks. I want to just make a follow-up. There was a case, I was part of it, where members of GMPD, the short 40 members at Pastor Mkoba's church. It happened on the 28th of February, 2021. So I just want to make a follow-up regarding the matter, because we have the view that the matter was reported to IPID, and then till today, it hasn't gotten any update as to how far did IPID go in terms of investigating the shootings, which resulted in 14 members of the church.
So what, the Metro Police shot at members of the church and some of them died in 2021?
No, they didn't die. They were injured.
Okay.
In various
what was the what were the circumstances there? What happened? Was there a protest?
There was a church service that was on.
Okay.
And then the metro officers came. I don't know who might have called them to come to the church, but when they came, it was said they were responding to those allegations. But then after some time, we started hearing them firing shot at the church members.
And you are a member of the church, no?
Yes, I was a member of the church. I'm a member of the church.
Okay. Emmanuel, what I'll do, because Tuso is not going to have all the details of investigations or complaints, what I'll do is I will keep you in touch with him. So we will put you back to the producers. They'll take your contact, Emmanuel, and then we'll get Tuso maybe to follow up on that case, and he can help us with an update. Is that fine? Or do you remember this case in point?
I think... The person, when he says the Metro Police and the church, and you think of, we have got seven Metro Police, we have got thousand and thousand of churches.
This must be the Johannesburg Metro Police because it's in Soweto. And this is a church in Soweto that this is where the shooting happened.
Which church?
This is the Makuba. This is the Unity Fellowship Church.
Okay.
Unity Fellowship Church of Pastor Makuba. It's in Chiawelo, in Soweto.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'll put you in touch with Emmanuel, because I imagine you're not going to have all the cases.
Yeah.
Tato was mentioning something about us being very careful of saying, yeah, people who are being appointed by the president or the ministers then are going to have some kind of influence. And I think she raises some good points, except judges are not necessarily appointed by the president. That's the JSC that does that. And in fact, the Constitution doesn't say... The president may or may not. When the JSC makes a recommendation, the president's job, as per what the Constitution says, is to appoint whoever the JSC says must be appointed. With the NPA, President Cyril Ramaphosa has realized the importance of the independence of that process. That's why he's come up with a new process where instead of him just appointing an NPA head, he brings in even the SARS commissioner, a panel that interviews those people, and they can make a recommendation to him. That is why right now there's a bill that has been signed in Parliament that curbs the police minister's powers to suspend or remove the head of the police watchdog. But some are still concerned that it gives the minister powers to recommend someone to take up the post And one wonders if that helps or makes things worse. That's been just a concern by some of the opposition members. Here are some WhatsApp voice notes that have come through as well.
Good day, Mr. Manyathela, and our 702 listeners. My question is not something that I experienced myself, but maybe I just need to be, you know, educated about this. When it comes to these crime prevention wardens, these are the guys that drive around our townships with these expensive vehicles. You won't miss them. They wear this green uniform. A cousin of mine had an issue a couple of weeks ago where he was walking around with a group of his friends, and then these guys came, stopped them, searched them. And when my cousin asked, "Why are you guys searching us?" He was then slapped. They beat them up, and they just got into the car and left. Now, I don't know about some of our 702 listeners, but if you have seen these guys, you would have noticed, I stand to be corrected again, maybe it's just the ones that I've seen. But the ones that I've seen, Mr. Manyathela, I've seen them with no name tags, name badges. You know, if you see them doing something wrong, where do you report them?
Yeah. Good morning. All right. Atuso, can you respond to that? Do you have oversight over the crime prevention wardens as well?
I want to say that IPTAS, the legislative mandate on the oversight responsibility over the SAPS and the Metropolis. As for the crime prevention wardens, I would say these are the peace officers. They are the same as the Cape Town city officers. Wherein we do not have any legal mandate to deal with their matters. So such matters can be reported to the police, not to us.
When it comes to crime prevention wardens?
Yes.
So you can, if they do anything, you go to the police and not necessarily you as IPED?
Indeed.
Okay. I wanted to ask about how widespread corruption is within the police. In your experience, how widespread is that? Because we often hear of how police officers are working with criminals sometimes. They warn them, you know, they get some money that gets paid to them. In your experience, how widespread is that?
You know, the crime stats that we are having, you know, I always say that, crime stats are the best tool, you know, to communicate the trends and patterns. Of late, we realized that the corruption matters have subsided. The cases of rape in custody, they have subsided to a point. At some point, we had zero reports. The cases of death in police custody, they have gone down drastically.
Now, is that because those cases are not happening, or is that because they're just not being reported?
You cannot lie about death in police custody. Death is death. You can't lie about it.
So it will get to you either somebody complains about it or not?
It will happen that we get to know about it because those are the most accurate stats. The rape in custody, I can tell you that 100% reporting it's happening. Now, even in some classifications, we see a decline. Systemic corruption, we have seen a decline that at some point, at this point in time, we have got zero case in our states. Now, I want to come to this point, that when IPIT makes an impact, it sends a message that we are doing something. And I'm not saying the SAPS management is folding its arms. They are also doing their part because we engage on these issues. Now, corruption has declined indeed. And even the amount, like the figures involved, is not like before where we would talk millions and millions.
Yeah, I want you to hold it there. I'm going to, because I'm late for news, I'm going to keep you a little bit for a few more minutes if you don't mind after the news, because I also want us to look at the positive impacts that the IPED has made, because there have been successful prosecutions. There are people that have been fired as police officers. So we'll get into that after the news.
702.
The Clement Maniatela Show.
Let's walk the talk.
Okay, we should behave. We have law enforcers in the studio with us. Okay, so I want us to wrap up our conversation with Thuso Kiefa Lakai, who is the director for the head of investigations at the Independent Police Investigative Directorate. Because I wanted to just play, I think there was one or two more voice notes that had come through. I wanted him to respond to that. And I wanted to ask, maybe before I go to those voice notes, Thuso, I wanted to ask about, because often, I remember, in fact, listening to the police minister say that there are no high levels of police brutality in the country. When you look at IPID's statistics, is the minister correct? Or do we have high levels of police brutality?
I think the concept of police brutality should be defined in its own context. Because the moment we say there is a high level of police brutality, we are saying even the in instances where the police were defending their lives, the nature when you of the work of the police will dictate that they should protect the lives of people and they should also protect themselves. Now, when you look at the number of death cases that are reported, that are termed as death as a result of police action, the number is worrying. But the moment you get into details to understand as to what this statistic mean, that's when now you are able to see that, yes, there are areas of concern, particularly the cases of gender-based violence and femicide. A husband killing a wife, a husband killing a family member.
With a police gun.
With the police gun. He's a police member because there was a feud within the family.
Mm.
And then he would then use that gun to kill the wife.
So in the context of the police brutality, in that it means the human rights violations by the police, whether that's beatings, that's racial abuse, that's GBV, as you say, unlawful killings, torture, are you saying that according to your own statistics, those numbers have been rising? There's an increase.
The numbers are worrying because our crime in the country generally, it has increased dramatically. The crime rate, when you look at the crime stats, serious crimes are on the rise. And it would not be a surprise to see IPID numbers rising in light of those serious crimes, because the police ought to respond to that.
Mm-hmm.
And more often, they are confronted with the resistance. And whether they were correct, they acted in the correct manner or not, to us is immaterial. That matter must be reported, and we will investigate it, irrespective of whether the police were correct or acted correctly or not.
Do you have, so what have been the successes on the part of IPID? I remember reading the annual report that at some point you had secured 239 disciplinary convictions with 53 officers dismissed from service. And when it came to criminal convictions, you had said as IPID that you secured 20 convictions with the highest sentence imposed being life imprisonment. The other sentences ranged between 8 and 22 years of acts of crime. What are some of the positive aspects of IPID? How have you done your work positively as a watchdog?
You know, the positives that you pick up from the work that you are doing is that there are certain matters, like I indicated earlier, that when we receive a rape case today, we make sure that it has to be, the investigation thereof has to be expedited.
Mm-hmm.
Cases of femicide, where women are victims and children, the investigation is so swift. And so those are the positives that we deal with those matters as a matter of agency.
Mm-hmm.
And coming to the issues of matters, like I indicated, that where matters happen within police custody, we had to come up with other mechanisms. We came up with other mechanisms to develop strategies such as the access and awareness strategy, mm-hmm. Where we educate the police. We don't just arrest them. We also educate as to how they should do their work.
Yeah.
And we also educate the communities to report those kind of things.
So someone was asking if you think it's advisable to maybe move IP to the Department of Justice in order to ensure that independence. Could that help?
For me, if that would be the case, it would still help. It's not here nor there, because what it's important for us as the department is that we have to account.
Mm.
Accountability is important.
Yeah. Lastly, what about people who complain about police officers, you know, the whistleblowers? How are they protected against the police? Because sometimes they may try and intimidate them.
The whistleblowers, there is a program, whistleblower program, that is handled by the NPA. Wherein, as and when we receive such information and we are dealing with a matter that is of serious nature, we then make provisions for that we will engage with NPA, and they will make a means to make sure that that person is protected, is accommodated, is fed, everything that needs to be
done. Are there cases where police officers steal guns? So you've got police officers who go on this gunfire with suspects and then they arrest, you know, 10 of them, but then they only recovered about 2 or 3 weapons.
On our high-profile case, it would have been a high-profile case if it so happened that the police are doing that. We haven't received such matter for the past 5 years.
Tuso Kiafelakai, thank you so much for engaging with us this morning on the show. I appreciate your time.
Thanks very much, sir.